sometimes complain about is, you know, that person is the teacher's favorite. And somebody else, obviously, is always the favorite. And but, you know, interestingly enough, and sometimes it can be pointed at others, that they're their favorite. And yet, when you walk into a high school, per se, or whatever, you recognize that people generally split up into groups based on who they have an affinity to. And that's normal. That's natural. We are drawn to people who have common interests and stuff. But sometimes you see this kind of class distinction where anybody from another group, say it's the academics or the jocks or the whatever it is, kind of looking down on each other. And we do. We tend to do that as people. We just, you know, and it's not just kids. It's adults as well. We kind of go, you know what, that person, I'm not going to give this person as much time. Or I'm not going to, you know, show any kind of love to this kind of group of people. And that can be very, very destructive. And James recognizes that. And he says, I want you to not be that way. I had a friend who was at UBC, and he was studying philosophy, and his roommate was studying medicine and becoming a physician. It was years ago, and they were renting the upstairs of a house down near UBC, and then there was another group of guys renting the basement of the same house. And these guys were busy, you know, studying and doing whatever, and the guys below were a bunch of guys who just really liked rock and roll. They worked sometimes. They were just guys who were just kind of going through life. You know, every once in a while they, you know, lots of drinking a beer, and every once in a while they'd smell some, you know, smoke coming up from the basement, and that was the style of these guys. I don't know if you ever seen if you remember the old Saturday Night Live, you know, Wayne and Garth, you know, party on dude kind of dudes. That was the kind of guys they were, right? So hat, long hair, you know, Mac jackets and whatever. And one night my friend was studying, and he was like, they were hearing just this loud party from downstairs. He says, I can't take it anymore. I can't study anymore. He says, if you can't beat them, join them. So he had this wig with really long hair. I have to say, these guys never interacted with each other. They just sort of look at each other with sort of judgment, like, I don't have anything to do with you. And the guys downstairs were like, yeah, I have nothing to do with you, right, kind of thing. So they'd never really interacted. They just kind of would pass each other. But so he takes this long wig and he puts it on, and he puts a trucker hat on, and he puts on a dark shirt, T-shirt, and then he puts on a kind of a Mac jacket on top of it, and, you know. And he just went downstairs and just walked in the room, you know. And the guys kind of looked at him and went, hey, well, welcome here, man. He sat down on the couch and they just had a conversation. Had no clue it was the same guy that was upstairs that they were passing all the time, right? But it's an interesting study in how sometimes we look at people and we identify them as being one of us or not one of us, and we treat them accordingly. And James is saying, if you have this glorious Lord, this glorious Father that we have, who doesn't approach it that way, who would come out of his glory, he's making that point with that word glorious, he would come out of his glory and be among us, be with us. The Gospel of Matthew says he didn't even have a home. He was the kind of guy that you would look at and just go, he was not a part of the religious elite, the intellectual elite. He had no status with the rich. This is the kind of person that Jesus became among us in order to show his love and his favor to all. He moved easily and well with any class of people, but he was totally classless in the way that his love and his welcome, his acceptance was there for everyone. And James is saying, how can you say if you're a follower of Christ, if you withhold love, if you withhold acceptance to those who are different from you, who you might look down upon for whatever reason? In James's day, it was a very class-structured society based on ethnicity, nationality, religious background. They were categorized as to whether they were Jew or Gentile. There was that ethnicity. There was slave or free. There was rich or poor. There was men or women. There was Greek or barbarian. There was all these different subsets of people, and we see it today. And I think as Canadians, sometimes we, you know, relish the fact that we're a pretty classless society. But when it really comes down to it, in our hearts, in who we are, do we truly reach out to every person, regardless of whether they are like us or what the aspect is? James is saying, you know what? I want the unity, when you're a Christ follower, to be so dramatic, to be so different, that people go, wow, something's totally different. And it was shocking to the ancient world during this time that they would walk into it and they were like, this was like, there's a whole new race of humankind here. This is all together. We're all one. It was an incredible kind of, well, both a stumbling block to some people who like to, in their pride, keep their distinctiveness, but it was also an incredible welcome to people going, wow, you mean I can come in there and people are going to love me. They're going to accept me. But it didn't come naturally. James had to remind them of this. He wanted them to know. He wanted to keep in mind. And they had very much like we do. And I think the secret kind of deal for us is that all of us have some sort of an unpublished list in our minds of who's in and who's out. And we oftentimes, it will come to the surface in some way or another. And James is saying, for people who follow Jesus, he says, I don't want you to be about favoritism. I want you to be radically inclusive. It's about receiving people at face value. The word favoritism comes from a Greek word that talks about receiving the face, and it's actually looking at what lies beneath. Who is it? And for us, I think we need to look at it and say, what kind of people? Is it a political group that I won't have, you know, that I just kind of look with disdain on? Is it an ethnic group? Is it a kind of a social kind of structure group? Who is it that for me, I've got to get past, you know, God wants me to move past this and say, I want to reach out and love these people. This is about acceptance. Years ago, we had some friends who we were newly married and we lived in an apartment. We had a little beater car. We didn't have much in terms of earthly possessions. And some people in our church would go away on vacation. They'd say, can you house sit for us? And they had a dog. So we'd go up and look after their house and have a blast. And they said they were just completely open, welcoming people. And they lived in a gated, kind of an exclusive gated community that was up on a hill. And it had kind of a little community center that had a swimming pool and tennis courts and a weight room. And it was just a lot of fun. So I'd have some friends over. And they were all kind of in the same, you know, socioeconomic category as me. They'd drive in, you know, with their, broken down mufflers and rusted cars and that sort of thing. And we weren't creating a ruckus or anything, but we were up there and just having a ball. I had, you know, no idea that, you know. And I ended up bumping into another guy and he says, yeah, my parents live up there. He says, I've been here and there's a bit of a buzz about you being up there. He says, you know, nobody really wants you up there. You just got to know that. They're questioning whether you should be able to use the community center. And I went, oh, and it just hadn't occurred to me. Okay, we aren't driving BMWs or Mercedes or, you know. And, you realize that if you're the person on the other end of it and you're not receiving acceptance, how that affects you. And the gospel does not come through when the actions or the attitudes are speaking louder than that. James chapter 2, verse 2 to 4, continuing on, it says, for example, suppose someone comes into your meeting dressed in fancy clothes and expensive jewelry, and another comes in who is poor and dressed in dirty clothes. If you give special attention and a good seat to the rich person, but you say to the poor one, you can stand over there, or else sit on the floor. Well, doesn't this discrimination show that your judgments are guided by evil motives? James is saying, take an examination. Look at your heart. You can underline that with those words, evil motives. He says, that's pretty strong. James goes after the heart. He says, when we spread out a welcome mat in our fellowship circle for some and others not, he says, what does that say? It talks about jewelry and having bling here. It says expensive jewelry. They actually, I guess I read in that ancient time, they actually had, the big deal was to wear big, gaudy rings. And male or female, it was all about the rings. And they even had stores, shops that would rent rings. And, we see that today, too, where you can kind of appear to have a lot of wealth. And people do that to kind of go, okay, you know, I'm something to be looked up to. And somehow, and it's our pride. And sometimes our motives can get messed up. And in this situation, he's saying, how can you, you know, you're moving towards the rich. And is it because in your heart, really, you hope to get more favor from them? Maybe there's going to be something coming back to you because you're getting close to them. Now, that can work in terms of wealth, but we can look at that in social kind of settings or whatever it might be. We go, you know, why do I get more animated when I'm, you know, with somebody that I think maybe has something to offer, some, you know, can advance me in some way? Why do I maybe show a little less a favor or less attention to that person who doesn't have as much, you know, that seems to be for me? And James is saying, I want the church to be the place where the only motive is love. Where the overarching motive is, I just want to love you because God has loved me so much. I just want to give this to you as well. I want to reach out and love to you. That's what it's about. When we were at we had a party for Pei and Jenny this week on their engagement and getting married, not this Saturday but next, which is just a lot of fun. And it brought me back to a memory. We were sharing kind of honeymoon memories and stuff. I didn't share this at the party that we had, but I've shared the story before. But it was an incredibly humbling story for me. It was the day after our wedding, and we were fortunate to have some friends give us a place to stay, their own home down in Palm Springs. And so we managed to scrape together some money and got a cheap flight out of Seattle down to L.A. And then the plan was that we were going to get on a shuttle that went between L.A. and Palm Springs, which is about an hour and a half away. And when we got down there, this is bad planning on my part. I should have a honeymoon a bit better. I hope you do better pay. I'm sure you will than this. But I got down there and found out the shuttle only happens in winter, not in the middle of summer, because, well, a lot of people don't go to Palm Springs in the middle of summer because it's 120 degrees, but it was 120 when we got there. But I thought, well, we started looking into ways to get from the airport to Palm Springs, and I decided that the Greyhound bus was the best method. It's not the best idea, maybe, on the day after your wedding, on your honeymoon. We got on the bus, and wouldn't you know it, this lady sat right behind us. You know how the whole thing of, you know, having a kid had a little toddler, really rambunctious toddler, really loud, cried a lot. The mom was dressed just like it describes here, in shabby clothes, and she would every once in a while light up a cigarette, and then the bus driver would get on and go, you know, can you put that cigarette on? There's no smoking here. And she'd, you know, say a few profanities, butt it out again, you know, cough, yell at her child, you know, who's running up and down the aisle. And I'm sitting there going, oh, man, it's supposed to be good, right? And this is ruining my, you know, one of the best days of my life it's supposed to be at. So I got all this judgment going on in my heart towards her. And we got to Palm Springs. We still had to get to a couple of communities over, which was still another 20-minute ride from the bus depot. And by the time we got there, it was midnight. And so we had to get to this place. And so there were taxis there. I hailed down a taxi and says, can you bring us over there? He says, sure. He says, but I take cash only. And this is another bad planning on my part. I had no American cash on me. So we're stuck. We're completely stuck. All of a sudden, this voice comes from behind me, and she says, I'm going that direction. I'm not going quite as far, but I can pay for the whole trip. And I look, and there's that woman on the bus. And it's like, I think both Suzanne and I are like, oh, do we ever feel humbled? She took us as far as where she was going, paid the extra amount, got us to where we needed to go, right when our time of need. And it's a classic, I think it illustrates that so oftentimes we look at people and we say, oh, they've got nothing for me. There's some kind of judgment that we have on them. And he wants us to know, James is saying, God is a person who is rich in love and mercy towards each person. And he's able to look at the heart, and he's able to look at who the person is, and he's able to reach out to us. He says, continuing on in verse 5, he says, listen to me, dear brothers and sisters. Hasn't God chosen the poor in this world to be rich in faith? Aren't they the ones who will inherit the kingdom he promises to those who love him? But you dishonor the poor. Isn't the rich who oppress you and drag you into court? Aren't they the ones who slander Jesus Christ, whose noble name you bear? I want you to underline in there, be rich in faith. True wealth is to be rich in faith. So oftentimes we look at the immediate and what's in front of us and, you know, even temporary wealth. But he says, you know what I'm looking for, what will really give you the depth of life is a richness of faith. Now, he isn't just, when we read this, we can't say, well, you know, the rich are going to hell and the poor are going to heaven. No, it's not that. But he's just making the point that oftentimes, and Jesus made it, he said it's very hard for the rich to enter the kingdom of heaven. Because we tend to trust in our own status, our own what we have, where we're going, what we've got going on. And it's the poor that oftentimes are the ones who go, I need God. And I think what it comes down to is recognizing our depravity and our need for God in the heart level. And that even as we look at ourselves and examine ourselves, we go, oh man, I don't show the acceptance and love of God. I need his grace. I need his mercy in my life. My money doesn't get me any of that. I like how the commentator Meyer says it. The rich man may trust God, but the poor man must. The poor man has no fortress in which to hide except the two strong arms of God. The point is, poor people are usually more aware of their powerlessness. And when it comes right down to it, it's often been noted, but we in Canada, we're rich. We're rich. By world standards, we are wealthy. It is so easy for us to forget our need for God's grace and his mercy because of our self-sufficiency. And James says, I want you to recognize that. And as you realize the depth of relationship that I have with you, and that human relationships are what really matters. This is God relationships with us, and our relationship with others is what really matters. James goes on to say, yes, indeed, verse 8, it is good for you when you obey the royal law as found in the scriptures. Love your neighbor as yourself. He's saying that's the biggest deal. Love your neighbor as yourself. But if you favor some people over others, you are committing a sin. You're guilty of breaking the law. For the person who keeps all of the laws except one is as guilty as the person who has broken all of God's laws. For the same God who says you must not commit adultery also said you must not murder. So if you murder somebody but do not commit adultery, you've still broken the law. James is reminding us that the overarching law of God is to love your Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. It's the first and most important thing. And he's saying the ultimate, the overall deal is it's binding in God's books that we love people. And when we favor others, some people above others, we commit a sin. And, you know, you read this and you go, well, what's going into this tangent about, you know, adultery and murder? What's going on here? I think the point that James is making is we see murder as really a heinous sin, and we should, taking another person's life. And when it comes to adultery, if you're the person who's been betrayed through the unfaithfulness of another person, you take that affair very seriously as well. And he's saying, you know what, favoritism, we might gloss over it, but he says it's in that category. It's among those heinous sins. The law of love is all-encompassing, and so James continues with that theme. He says, so whatever you say or do, remember that you will be judged by the law that sets you free. The love of God for us, the love of us for others, the love of us for God. There will be no mercy to those who have not shown mercy to others. But if you've been merciful, God will be merciful when he judges you. I think it's important to note, God's judgment of us as Christ followers is not towards condemnation. But God does judge, and he judges sin. And I think sometimes we can get fuzzy on this, and we can start to go, well, you know, acceptance and no favoritism means that we no longer judge wrongdoing. But that's God asks us to. He says you need to judge, first of all, in yourself, wrongdoing, and not gloss over even the, you know, more acceptable sins that are there. But you need to also recognize that in others. But we can judge sin, but still love people and accept people and love them just where they're at. Because that's what God does for us. And we're all in the same boat on that level. So I think it's really important to recognize that God does call us to that, but he says, I want you to be merciful. Because ultimately, when it comes to all of our wrongdoing and our favoritism towards others, God forgives as we turn to him, as we say, God, I need your mercy. I need your grace. Mercy is love in action. Mercy is an attitude that starts in our heart with a love. It's something that frees us. I think freedom, true freedom, is I can be myself, I can love others, and I will receive mercy, not judgment. I can give mercy and not judgment to others. God says when we lead with that foot, we're being like Christ. We're recognizing that, you know, the problem is in me. The problem is in all of us. But I reach out in love and grace for others. And I'm not looking at whatever it is that seems to be a stumbling block. You know, we had this tragic situation down in, America did, with the South Carolina, the person who walked into a church and based on racism opened fire on the people there. And it's just tragic. And you can see the extreme ends of things sometimes in some certain situations. I came across a story of an African-American man who was trying to join a church. And there's so incredible kind of segregation in many situations. And he was in the southern states, and it had a long history, this particular church, of people who wouldn't let him in. And the pastor just kind of glossed over and said, well, no, it's no big deal. You just need to pray about it. And a few weeks later, the pastor saw him and said, did you talk to God about that? The guy said to him, did you pray about this problem that the church won't, you know, let you in and isn't accepting you? And the man said, yes. And God told me not to worry about it. God said, I've been trying to get into that church for 20 years, and they haven't let me in either. So God actually says, you know, if this is the kind of attitude you have, then, you know, there's judgment. God, we need to look at that and say, I want to be a person who's accepting, who's loving, who's going to reach out. My prayer and my hope is that Coast Hills is that kind of place, that we're free of the kind of bondage that comes from these kinds of attitudes, these kinds of discrimination, and that we would be a church that sees each person as God sees them, with a heart of love and grace and mercy, and an invitation, as it is for all of us, come, all of us, myself with my own favoritism, my own sense of bigotry and pride, and comes to God and says, I lay it all down before you, God, and thank you for forgiving me. Mercy triumphs over judgment. This is what you do for me. So as we go this week, I hope and pray that we can look at people in a new way. As we, whether it be passing people on the street, whether it be in our work situations, maybe there's someone that you think, okay, God's been putting that person in my mind. I need to reach out and love. I've been in a place of bondage because I've been in judgment. I want to see that I can extend myself. We always have that choice. We can extend or we can withdraw. And it's sometimes very insidious, but it's about saying, I'm going to accept people. I'm going to love them as God does, as he does for me with all of my issues. We can do it. We can be a church. We can be a person that says, you know what? People are radically invited and included in this place. James says, let's not show favoritism. That's where the rubber meets the road. I want to close with prayer, and then Steve and the band is going to lead us again, and we'll go out and enjoy this beautiful day and Father's Day together and whatever else you might have planned. Let's rise together, and I'll just close in prayer. God, I just want to thank you. I thank you that you are a God who does not show favoritism, that we don't have to earn your love or somehow come put up fronts and airs. We can be authentic and real with you, God, because mercy triumphs. I thank you for your mercy towards us, Lord. May we become more like you. God, help us to recognize these kind of insidious sins that that can keep us from being free. Help us, Lord, to see that you have no favoritism and to be like you, to be your disciples, to model that to others, Lord, to reach out in love and acceptance and a hopeful perspective on each person that comes across our paths, Lord. Help us to walk in that way this week.